This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Hey, everyone. Do you wish you were somewhere sunny, but are dealing with another crazy spring? There's a solution to get that feeling. I'm grabbing a Hawaiian Breeze 5-Hour Energy and escaping there in my mind. Sports fans, ever stay up late for the game and drag the next day? A 5-Hour Energy shot will fix that no problem. 5-Hour Energy's website has tons of flavors, over 15 to choose from. Watermelon, Tropical Burst, Blue Raspberry, and even hard-to-find ones like Strawberry Lemonade and Extra Strength Fan Fuel. There's a flavor for everyone. You can even build your own 12 or 24-pack and have it delivered. Or grab a shot at your local store. They're everywhere. And it's basketball season. My schedule is packed, and I don't want to miss a second, so I grab a 5-Hour Energy shot. They're perfect for back-to-back games or when my team plays late. 5-Hour Energy keeps me going through the game and the next morning. Visit 5hourenergy.com for deals and to stock up before tip-off.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
It's time to wake on up, wake up with a nice cup of Joe.
What's up, Joe, bro?
Featuring Joe Spadoni.
He's an Italian.
And Joe, the Butcher Boy Shasky.
I am slippery.
Oh!
The best part of waking up is morning roast in your cup.
It is the morning roast, man, on 95.7 The Game.
Shot clock down to 12. Butler draws two, bounce pass Draymond, dropped it, in trouble, finds Pajemski, he's open, it's a three ball, and it's good! Doubles the Warrior advantage, he's got 14 points.
The great Sim Roy on the call for the Golden State Warriors. Evan Giddings sitting in for Joe Spadoni here on the Morning Roast alongside Joe Shasky. Honestly, a really important win for the Golden State Warriors last night. A bounce-back win for the Golden State Warriors last night. And I don't know if it necessarily wipes away all the taste that we were left with 24 hours ago, Shasky, but what I know is that a lot changes in one day.
A lot changes in one day?
Yeah, a lot can change in one day.
That loss against Denver is still going to sting. But how about my boy, Jimmy? Jimmy, 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 Jimmy,
Jimmy, Jimmy, Jimmy.
Oh, Ev, look, I was very angry at the Denver game. Obviously, the turnovers were horrific, but to me, part of why you got Jimmy Butler was to take some of the load off of Steph Curry in these methodical closeout games. And you saw it yesterday on full display. And I don't even know if it was vintage playoff Jimmy. It was a version of what you expect from Jimmy Butler.
Jimmy freaking Butler!
But to me, the whole game swung. It was 76-70. And I want to give some credit to two players that we might be, you know, crushing over the last couple of months. 76-70. And Buddy Hield steps in front of a pass, intercepts it, goes down. It's a transition three. Bang! He hits it in. And I'm like, okay, after 8,000 turnovers in the third quarter, where Coach Shasky, myself, is pulling my eyeballs out at how horrific the possessions were. And we all were. We're like, are you really going to blow this game? You're really going to do this? And then credit Jonathan Kuminga, gets into the lane, gets fouled, hits two free throws, closes out on a three-point shooter on the next possession. They come down, foul Jimmy Butler. It gets reviewed. It's a forever review. He hits the three free throws right there and then. To me, that was the salvaging of the game. And then I thought they methodically just bled them out in the fourth quarter. It was a great win.
for Jimmy Butler to like just settle, and we're talking about this during the game because, gosh, they had 10 turnovers in the third quarter. It felt like the game was slipping out of their hands, and I don't know about you, but a lot of people in the building, and especially a couple of friends I was sitting next to, they did not feel good about their chances.
No.
They were thinking that, especially the fact that Giannis had been quiet for most of the game. Lillard hadn't really done much. The Bucks as a whole were not hitting a ton of shots. Mm-hmm. It felt like everyone in the building was expecting them to just let that game slip away. And your point, Jimmy Butler, Cool Hand Luke, over the last, you know, tail end part of the three quarter, really that 3-point foul,
mm-hmm.
and then the beginning of the fourth quarter, to me, just he grabbed the steering wheel and turned the car back into the HOV line where they can then cruise right down the 101. Like, the Golden State Warriors, that was a game they had to get. And I understand they didn't have Steph Curry. And I understand they were undermanned. They were on the tail end of a back-to-back. But after losing the way that they did, getting mm-hmm. embarrassed against the Denver Nuggets, I felt like they had to win that game. And Milwaukee's not a bad team.
No.
They're an interesting team. They're a team that I don't think I would consider a contender.
They're a matchup-dependent team for me.
But they're a solid squad.
Absolutely.
And they have one of the game's best players.
Absolutely.
And so for the Warriors to do that, undermanned, and again, on the tail end of a back-to-back, I thought it was impressive.
The third quarter, I mean, they got a huge lead, and we're all thinking the same thing, like, all right, just come out in the third quarter and just, let's just find a way to not do what you did the night before, which was turn it over. I just wrote this down. At one point, you had a Quinn Post travel, okay, which he argued. Then you had a Brook Lopez three-pointer that we saw coming a mile away, where Quinn Post is still frustrated because of the travel that he had. Then on the very next play, a careless Pajemski turnover, who was brilliant in this game. I want to make sure I'm clear. Brilliant in this game. Then, bang, another Bucks three. Then another turnover where they throw it into the abyss. And then an offensive foul. At one point, they had six consecutive hollow possessions. And you look up, and the Bucks are in full control of the game. And it's just like, are you kidding me? And then the Kuminga travel, you know, right before the sequence that I referenced with the Buddy Hield play,
yeah.
where he moved his pivot foot. That was the 10th turnover in that quarter. There was a sequence with when you had the 5-6 turnovers in a row. I'm saying, Steve Kerr, call a timeout. Call a timeout, stop the bleeding, put the ball in the hands of Jimmy Butler, right? And so, you know, there's a lot of frustration. I'm happy they won this game without Steph Curry. I'm happy that Quint Post looked really good in this one. But more than ever, like, Pajemski coming back, being a force, I thought he was excellent down the stretch,
mm-hmm.
but he was great early in this game as well, hitting shots, and it felt like the team played galvanized, connected basketball, even though there was about a 9-minute stretch in the third quarter where I was going to pull all the little bit of hair I have left in my head out.
Well, that's the thing that sucks, Shask, is it felt like that one stretch could have completely derailed the game when, I would say for about 40 minutes, they outplayed Milwaukee.
Agreed.
But those 8 minutes nearly lost them the basketball game. And so that was what was so painstakingly ridiculous about this game. It's like, you guys just undid all the work that mm-hmm. you did to get the 17-point lead, to go into the half up 14, and then it unravels. And like the six turnovers that you're talking about are from six different players.
It wasn't so bad.
One guy. Again, Steph had seven turnovers against Denver. Draymond Green was throwing passes mm-hmm. early. You could look at a couple of different guys and say, you're the reasons why we're not taking care of the basketball. It was like the team just got sick, and they were passing it all around.
And then Draymond had one as well, where Buddy Hield is on the wing, and there's nobody at the block, and so, hey, he's going to V-cut and go to the hoop, and Trey just throws it away, and I'm thinking to myself, Trey, you've got to understand, when you've turned it over a gazillion times in a row, we've got to protect the ball here, and I know you want to throw that backdoor pass, but risk-reward, situational basketball. So I thought Jimmy Butler, and obviously Buddy Hield had a really good game. It frightens me beyond belief, Evan, that I do believe at some point this season is going to come down to, does Buddy hit a couple shots? Because that's how thin and razor thin the margins are. But Jimmy Butler, I thought, was methodical and excellent. And the way they played offense in the final 8 minutes, to me, needs to be examined. You can blend the frenetic pacing of Steph once he returns with the methodical, let's take our time, let's get a good shot, we can hit the mid-range, let's pass the ball around. The way Jimmy was methodical in that fourth quarter, I thought was, that, to me, that's the big takeaway from this game. I want to see more of that. that combined with the frenetic play of Steph Curry, that's how we're going to beat teams.
Evan Giddings in for Joe Spadoni alongside Joe Shasky. And I think it's a great place to start. Like, does that game or does that play from Jimmy Butler, you know, does it nullify the Nuggets game? How does it calm your concerns? 888-957-9570. We got a lot to unpack from this game. We're going to catch up with Anthony Slater of The Athletic at 8:30, of course, on the River Islands guest line. Shout out to everybody filing in on YouTube and Twitch, powered by First NorCal Credit Union. We're coming to you live from the Laughing Monk Studios. Laughing Monk, righteously brewed in San Francisco. To me, the win itself does wipe the taste away from Monday. That loss is concerning for maybe bigger reasons as far as a potential postseason matchup in the playoffs. But when it comes down to where the Warriors are at in the standings, you had to win that game. And you couldn't foresee the Clippers losing to Cleveland. But if they lost that game last night, which again, based on the stretch of basketball we're talking about, easily could have slipped away. No Curry. You're turning the basketball over. It's a pandemic of turnovers. You can't get this thing back on track. They would have been in eighth. You and I would be talking about a Golden State Warriors basketball team that after winning 14 of 16 games would be in eighth place if they had lost last night.
And I think we would be fielding calls all day about how clunky the Kuminga thing has looked.
Yeah.
Right? Look, I'm probably one of the bigger Kuminga fans, and I see the value he brings to the table. But it hasn't looked pretty the last couple of games, but I do think that the guy is trying. He did a great job on multiple closeouts. He had a couple of really nice boxouts. But what people are going to hyper-focus on are the turnovers, kind of the clunky back-to-the-basket game, which he continues to go back to, which the team goes back to, which I don't think is a refined part of his game. Him in the block, back to the basket. He just settles for these, like, odd fadeaway middies that just aren't high-percentage shots. He needs to work in that area, and he's got that flat three-pointer that nobody loves, and I think that he's got to take it at times for defenses to honor him out on the perimeter. If they lose that game, I think we're getting a lot of calls on, oh, Jonathan Kuminga, he wants $30 million. And it's just everyone, pump the brakes. He's coming back from missing 2 months. Let him assimilate a little.
Yeah, that game was set up for him to be the scapegoat. Like, right? There's no doubt about that. And I think people were already talking about that in the third quarter, right? Because I think by the end of the quarter, he was 2-for-10.
Yes.
Hadn't played very well so far, was forcing a lot of things. You know, the Bucks obviously made a run when he was on the floor. It was set up for him to be the scapegoat. But to your point, he hit two important free throws at a point where they stabilized the game. He went 6-of-6 at the free throw line. And I just don't think it's fair right now to make an overwhelming evaluation of his game because, like you said, he's still getting his legs back. He hasn't played that much basketball since he went down on January 4th. And while he may end up continuing to play like this, and then our criticism can come, to me, like jumping on him for a game last night, to me, I would label that premature.
I totally agree, but they're going to need him. Like, the reality is that what does this team lack? They lack elite wings that can defend. I'm talking about defensively, who are long. And I don't know if he's elite necessarily, but on this team, he's one of their premium, you know, wing defenders. It's GP2. Buddy is a better wing defender than we give him credit for. I don't think he's a turnstile, but I also don't think he's, you know, Kawhi Leonard in his prime. He's somewhere in the middle. And then Jimmy Butler. You're going to need Kuminga. Do you see who the West has? We didn't get a chance to see Jamal Murray the other night, but you're going to have to defend him at some point. We know what OKC brings to the table. We know, obviously, what the Lakers present in terms of size and physicality from those two wings in LeBron and Luka. They're going to need Jonathan Kuminga. For me, it's the refinement in the half court and him trying to like get his mojo. I don't think it's via throwing him the ball in the post. And they kept doing that the last couple of games. I want to see them run a little more high pick and roll for him. He needs to be going downhill. He needs to be attacking opponents where they're backing up, trying to defend the rim. That's where he's best utilized. Not at the block, saying, everybody clear out, nobody move, we're just going to stay stagnant, JK, you cook. He's not Kevin McHale.
No, I mean, you know, you have to sugarcoat it. Like, he wasn't very good last night. Yeah, I shouldn't say no one. Kuminga was not able to stay in front of Giannis. The guy who was and really flipped this game with his defense was Draymond Green. And I thought it started from the very first possession.
Yes.
He guards him well, doesn't foul, gets the block underneath. And from that point on, it was like, I don't know if Giannis lost his mojo, but you do not see very many 5-for-16s from Giannis Antetokounmpo. He shoots 60% from the field and averages 30 points. And Draymond Green, I thought, was sensational last night. And as equal of a reason on the other end of the floor defensively, why they won the game as much as Jimmy did.
You know what I love about what I've seen from the Warriors last like month and a half? They've been doubling guys at the right time. They're like, oh, you put the ball on the ground, and now you're starting to back up your opponent. We're going to send that late double to you as the shot clock's winding down, and we're going to make you either take a very difficult shot with two people around you, or we're going to force the ball out of your hands. I thought they did a really good job blitzing the ball handler at the top of the key. They did that over and over again. They're basically saying, hey, Brook Lopez, we dare you to have a monster night. And he was quiet early, and he started hitting shots in the third quarter. Their defense was really good. Dre, specifically, Evan, I like what he does before Giannis catches the ball. He's out in front on him, kind of forcing him to work so hard before he even gets the ball that he's exerting energy. You see this a lot with Steph Curry. And I thought that was kind of the template for how they slowed down Giannis yesterday.
Yeah, I mean, I thought that Draymond Green basically made his life hell. You know, and good players are going to make tough shots. Last night, Giannis didn't make the tough shots. Draymond Green is a primary defender on Giannis. Giannis was 0-for-6. He did not score a single field goal. Now, he got to the free throw line. That's what he does.
And he takes 15 seconds to shoot a free throw. Let me ask you this. In terms of flattest shots in the history of the NBA, flattest shots, Jimmy Butler, Draymond Green, and Giannis are in a room. Who's got the flattest of the shots?
Yes.
It's crazy, right?
Yes. I mean,
they're all great players. They're all probably going to the Hall of Fame. They all shoot the flattest shot I've ever seen in my life.
Well, the first quarter took 30 minutes, and I felt like 10 minutes of which I was just watching Giannis at the free throw line. The 10-second violation...
It's ridiculous.
It's worse than the travels that are not called. Like, if you are at the free throw line for 10 seconds... That's a turnover.
I completely agree.
And it should be the easiest thing to officiate. Just like we have the pitch clock in baseball now. Just put a 10-second timer up on the board, and when it strikes midnight, send the guy to the other side of the floor, please.
We just saw an 8-second violation. How many games ago was that for Steph Curry? Like 5, 6,
yeah.
Right? I hadn't seen that in years, an 8-second violation, where he's just bringing the ball up the court. If you're going to call that on Steph Curry, you better call the 10 seconds on Giannis. I was counting it out. I was hoping that the crowd, because I seen it in the playoffs, you know, 1, 2, 3, like they start counting out the clock, or maybe they go backwards, 10, 9, 8, 7. But it's ridiculous how long he takes. I mean, it really is, and his form is, it's bad.
I mean, I guess you're watching the game at home, you could do some chores. You know, you could fold laundry, or I don't know, if you're with little AJ, you can try and do some with him. In between free throws, it's like, you get a 5-minute break every time he steps to the free throw line.
It's so bad. It's so bad.
And look, it slowed the game down. I thought the game itself was a little bit of a slog, especially in the third quarter. But overall, I will say this. Those are the kinds of games that the Warriors are winning with more consistency now. The rock fights,
sure.
The defensive battles. Again, they held Milwaukee to 93 points in this game. And I thought overall, you know, the Warriors, they had to go get this one.
They absolutely did. And what I love from Steve Kerr, because I thought he made a couple of adjustments. Defensively, we kind of already spoke about blitzing some of the guys at the top of the key. Basically making Dame Lillard relocate, which he doesn't want to do. He kind of wants to stand at the top of the three-point line and just kind of hover. He doesn't want to run around like Steph Curry does. He went back to Quentin Post. Thank you. Go back to the man. He had, what, 24, 25 minutes? How many did he end up with last night? Almost 23 minutes, okay? Like, you have to use Quentin Post. To me, the Rook is going to make mistakes. He's going to get picked on defensively. He's going to be slow on a rotation here and there. I mean, you saw a couple of, I would say, cheapo depot, I'm not paying attention, not moving my feet fouls, which get guys to the free throw line. That's going to happen. But what he does for you offensively, where he bangs a couple threes, it just opens the floor up, and he's a guy that has to be honored. And on a team where you're going to play Kevon Looney or TJD big minutes, where you're going to play GP2 big minutes, and Draymond Green obviously going to play heavy minutes. You have to have people that can space the floor. You know, and another guy we haven't talked. I thought Gui Santos had a couple of big rebounds in this one.
Yeah, it was a team win last night. I thought spearheaded, obviously, by Jimmy Butler's first. I don't know if we call it a Jimmy game, but definitely his first game without Steph that we've seen him. They won that game against a quality opponent. Draymond Green's defense on Giannis was absolutely necessary. Those were the two players to me that really spearheaded that victory. But overall, how are fans feeling about that ball game? Does it nullify the Nuggets' loss? Does it calm some concerns? Or does it still feel like we haven't learned much about this team. I think we did last night, and I'll tell you why on the other side when we come back. Evan Giddings in for Joseph Bedoni along with Joe Shasky. What's coming up in the game is brought to you by Valvoline Instant Oil Change. Spring into action at Valvoline Instant Oil Change, your 15-minute drive-through oil change. Stay in your car while friendly technicians check oil, batteries, lights, tires, and more. Locations and coupons at BarryOilChange.com. All vehicle types welcome.
Wow. What's up? I just bought and financed a car through Carvana in minutes.
You? The person who agonized 4 weeks over whether to paint your walls eggshell or off-white bought and financed a car in minutes?
They made it easy. Transparent terms, customizable down and monthly. Didn't even have to do any paperwork.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Hey, have you checked out that spreadsheet I sent you for our dinner options?
Finance your car with Carvana and experience total control. Financing subject to credit approval.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed's sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
And now, two pigeons who can't believe how good humans have it with DirecTV.
These humans are hopping from streaming apps to live sports without batting a wing.
All from the DirecTV home screen.
With just one click, you could be watching a baseball game, a movie on Netflix,
or a critically acclaimed documentary.
You watch documentaries?
I love the ones that leave you with a question.
What?
Exactly.
DirecTV, a better way to watch whatever you want to watch. Visit DirecTV.com.
Internet-connected Gemini device, separate Netflix membership, and additional paid subscriptions required for third-party apps.
Low-carb keto yo-yo diets, GLP-1 injections, but you're never going to lose weight if your liver is clogged with fat. So what can you do? It's simple. Almacid. Almacid is a natural superfood protein shake that uses natural amino acids and bioactive peptides to help unclog your liver and optimize your metabolism so it's easier to lose weight. And it's been scientifically proven to preserve muscle mass. Join millions who have transformed their lives with Almacid. Find out more and see the university studies at almacid.com. That's almased.com.
Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+.
Before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recaps. And after that, we're going to keep going as we recap every episode of season 2.
The Severance podcast with Ben Stiller and Adam Scott is presented by State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Listen and follow now on Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Draymond guarding Porter Jr. Ball goes out to Kuzma. He's been hot tonight. Takes the three. It's an air ball. Moody's got it with 5 seconds to go to Draymond. Draymond to Butler. Butler catches. Takes a dribble. Takes a three. It's up. He got fouled. He got fouled with .2 to go in the quarter.
Jimmy freaking Butler.
Come on, man. You got Larry June in the building. You listen to the Morning Roast. And we're doing numbers, man. Good job, Morning Roast. Sock it to me. Hey, 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 hey.
Yee. Jimmy freaking Butler he's like a mastermind on the floor. To be able to get the contact, like that 3-point foul that he forced at the end of the third quarter, the 4-point play that he got in the second half, I haven't seen a player be able to do that. Like he grifts, and I know it's going to sound like a homer take, but he's like a pure grifter. Like, he doesn't just search for contact because he knows that he can't do anything else. He only tries to get contact when he's got the angle. And there's just something a little more pure about it than, I guess I'll say, the SGA.
I actually think he's more, I get what you're saying in terms of trying to foul hunt and all that. To me, he just plays through people's shoulders, especially around the rim. And so when you play that way in an era where no one else plays that way anymore, it feels like you're going to get a lot of calls. Like, when I think of Jimmy Butler, he goes up strong. He had a finish with the left hand underneath the hoop. I don't even know how he got that shot up yesterday. He is excellent around the rim. I said to you before the show, and I've said this for about a month, and you're like, well, they really don't have anybody. I'm like, yeah, that's why he's the guy. Jimmy Butler is their best back-to-the-basket player, which is a crazy thing to say, but it's factually accurate. He's also their best post player.
I don't think it's close.
But it's, you know what I mean? Like he lives at the block.
When you said that, I was like, I don't even know who's second on this basketball team.
Maybe Kevon Looney? Maybe?
Perhaps. I mean, maybe.
But he's a distant second.
Exactly. It probably used to be Wiggins, but now he's gone.
Yeah.
I mean, but they don't play in the post. I don't know if it's because they have nobody who can, or this is not what they do. They have a lot of players that will catch the ball in the post and then pass out of it.
Well, this is where Kuminga, and there's other conversations, but this is where, to me, he should have been working, and he should be working on all of his back-to-the-basket game. And if they're going to use him that way, he's got to refine that aspect of his game. He can't be relegated to being a guy, I take a couple dribbles, I back my guy down, I don't spin left ever, I don't spin on anyone when I have leverage the way Jimmy would or other elite players would, LeBron would, for example. I just take, you know, weak, contested fadeaways as I'm, you know, going away from the lane. But you brought up the Jimmy thing and the three-point foul at the end of the quarter. Look, I'm just a consumer of sports, all right? And the majority of people aren't in the arena, but it also affects those that are in the arena. When I'm on my couch and I'm watching, and it takes minutes to do these stupid reviews, what are we doing? I don't need to see the officials huddle up. We get, you know, the two-man shot of Fitz and Buki, and they're talking about the play, and we see the replay from 17 different angles, and they're still talking about it, and they're still talking about it, and then we show the replays again, and then they're coming back, and then we talk to the coach. I'm talking about the officials, and then the other official talks to the coach, and then they come to the center court, and then, you know, whoever is the official, they look into the camera like they're delivering the OJ verdict, and they start reading off what just happened. Can we just get this thing going? Let's go!
Why do they have to be on their side? They're kind of looking at you like, I don't know, they're staring into the camera of a pageant or something.
It's ridiculous.
And the way that they deliver their, right, the verdicts, to me it's just, well, even plays like the Kuminga one where they upgraded to a flagrant.
Yes.
Just make a call.
That's what I'm saying.
Just make the call, all right? You felt like he did enough to get a flagrant foul. Make the call and let's move on.
100%. But I think as a consumer of the product, the games, similar to the way I was critiquing baseball for pace of play and everything, and like just the way the game was stylistically looked at. Look, I understand why we have replay. You know what I don't want? Honestly, I don't want to look at the same replay 7,000 times and let it take 2.5, 3.5 minutes. It takes away from the momentum and the flow of the game. The NBA is at its best when we're having free-flowing action back and forth, and there's a barrage of things happening, whether it's live ball turnovers leading to transition, whether it's three balls back and forth, whether it's answering, whether it's intense defense. That's when it's at its best, and you're slowing down the momentum of the action, and you're giving people an opportunity to rest. And it just breaks the whole thing up. We've got enough baked-in commercials, which I get. It's, you got to pay off the corporate sponsors. I understand all that. We've got to get back to, like, make a call. If within 10 to 30 seconds you can't figure it out, we go with the call that stands. We don't need to be looking at everything with a fine-tooth comb. And the last thing, I don't need to hear about the two-minute report 3 days later about all the things that were wrong. If you didn't get it wrong or right in real time, we move on. I don't need to see the report. It does nothing. It accomplishes absolutely nothing. As a watcher of the game, the NFL and the NBA, stop with the over-the-top replays. 30 seconds, in and out, let's go. Because they're not getting it right anyway.
No, and on TV, at the very least, you have something to look at. It doesn't help the pace of play. But when you're in the arena, it makes it an even worse experience because you're sitting there wondering what is going on.
Did they show the replay last night?
Yeah, a couple times, but they're never going to, like, it doesn't matter to me because no one's glued to that. They're glued to their phones, or they're glued to, I don't know, maybe they're in line to get a refreshment. They're trying to go get to the bathroom. Like, people aren't in the arena to watch the big screen. They're there to watch the game. And it's the biggest reason why I had an issue with, like, the All-Star game. The All-Star game, even if the format you liked, there was just too many stoppages.
Yes.
There's not enough play.
Pace
Everyone's there to
important.
Watch the game. Yeah, no, so I'm 100% with you on that.
But, like, I think the biggest problem, and I'm talking about regular season product, like the playoffs kind of, like, I get slowing it down and grinding it down. Like, I believe me, I understand all that. There's a time and a place for everything. Just, in general, we shouldn't have 42-minute quarters. Like, what are we doing? Like, what? Well, that first quarter was ridiculous.
It was.
And then I watched them. There was one, Giannis got fouled, okay? Guys, line up, let's go. Line up, shoot the free throw. Let's go. What are we doing? They're farting around and the ref's walking around. Guys are, you know, pleading their case on why it wasn't a foul. Line up, let's shoot the free throws. And then after 35 seconds of just puttering around, they finally line up. Then another 10 seconds. Okay, I'll pass Giannis the ball. Then 10 seconds for Giannis to shoot the free throw. My God, let's go. Let's go. I mean, Jesus, I know, Evan, I sound like an old man, but like pace of the game is really important. And when I watched the game yesterday, and I know Jimmy does this too, because Jimmy gets fouled a lot. And so we are now a part of this aspect of the game. But the reality is, speed it up. It's a television product.
Well, let's get Chris involved from San Jose. Help us speed this thing up. 888-957-9570 is the number. Chris, what's going on? How you doing, my man? Good morning.
Hey, what's happening, Grandy? Morning, Mr. Shafsky.
What's up, bro?
Before I get into it, Grandy, really appreciate your post-game analysis.
Oh,
I feel
Evan.
Like ever since you've been...
It's Evan, not Grandy.
Oh, Evan Giddings. Okay, my bad. Well, whatever. I apologize. I really passed this along.
Don't worry, you're not
really
the only one that's made that mistake, Chris.
Analysis.
Appreciate it, man.
You guys sound similar. I apologize. But hey, with the Warriors, you know, personally, I'm not a believer in the Bucks in terms of being like a true title contender. I think you got two teams out east, Cleveland, Boston. You got a few in the west. So, you know, you play who you play. I think at the end of the day, we can beat anybody. We got to see, you know, finish the season strong, get in one of those playoff spots. And then, you know, I think over the course of a seven-game series, I think we can stack up with anybody. With that said, I still think our ultimate downfall could potentially be size. And Steve Kerr, you know, he's really going to have to orchestrate this thing and put on a masterclass, because I do, you know, it's like Shasky said the other night, he goes away from post. We don't really see him again. Last night goes away from post. He reintegrates him. So, I look at this team and similar to how we were at the start of the year, you know, 12-man deep. I look at this team and I see 10 to 12 guys who could and should contribute to this team on any given night. So at the end of the day, players got to play. They got to play, you know, above their means at times. But I do think it kind of falls on Kerr to put on a masterclass and pull the right strings. But again, I believe we can beat anybody on any given night. We still haven't really stacked up against a true title contender, in my estimation. But yeah, got to believe. Love the direction. Love how they bounce back on a back-to-back without Curry. And we keep it moving. Y'all have a wonderful Wednesday, and I'm here to listen to your comments off air. Have a good one.
Appreciate it, Chris. Yeah, no Curry. I mean, that's the overarching part of this, is they did this all without their best player. And that's why, again, in a game you had to have, I know that people might have been going and wondering, how are they going to get this done? But for the team to dig deep like that, like, they played with desperation last night. And you don't often see that in the regular season, but I think because they got their ass kicked and they got embarrassed the night before, it extracted that level of, you know what? Yeah, let's not get punked tonight. Let's go out and be the guys that do it to the other team.
I thought that Pods was really good early in the game and kind of set the tone for, hey, we're going to be out here scrapping. And, you know, him hitting a couple shots early is really a big thing for him. I've noticed that. Like, his floor game changes when he hits the first couple shots from deep. And, I mean, they had at one point a 20-10 lead. And I'm thinking, oh, my God, this is one of the better first quarters in quite some time. And obviously, they slowly started to lose that lead, and they fought back. But I think the number one thing for me is that when they're playing at their most optimal, they are all over the place defensively in terms of help, right? Someone gets blown by, here comes the rotation, here comes the help. And then they're frenetic in the loose ball stuff, which they did a much better job of yesterday. And then they're ball hopping on offense. And I thought that they balanced it just right with, let's attack certain matchups and be methodical, and let's kick it to the open guys. And you got open looks. And I got to give credit to Buddy Hield. I thought Buddy Hield played a great game yesterday. Him and Pods were really good.
All right, here's what we got going on today. Evan Giddings in for Joe Spadoni alongside Joe Shasky. At 7:30, We got a segment we're unveiling. Well, not unveiling. You guys have done this before, right? Do you believe?
We do this every day after a Warrior game.
After a Warriors game. Okay. Do you believe?
Since the Jimmy acquisition.
I got you.
Do you believe?
Makes it a lot easier now. It's a game where we ask Dub Nation how much they believe in the Warriors' title chances. And I think it kind of bleeds into the question, does it make you forget about the loss yesterday? If not, how so? And if it does, why? Tell us why. The Warriors won a game without Steph. We saw the Jimmy game. Draymond was awesome defensively. A lot of big players stepped up down the stretch that we can dig into. 888-957-9570 is the number. Also, Anthony Slater of The Athletic coming up at 8:30 on the River Islands guest line. And that's what's coming up in the game brought to you by Life Source Water Systems. Again, Giddings in for Spadoni. Shasky, back after this in the Morning Roast.
Adekupo picks up the dribble. Gets it now up top. Porter Jr. blocked by Draymond. Ball batted down by Adekupo to Lillard. He's trapped. Tries to dribble it through Pajemski's leg. Takes him down. Ball stolen by Golden State. Buddy Hield up the floor. Three ball! Chase Center is rocking. 16-0-1.
Dub Nation is Brandon Pajemski. You're listening to The Morning Roast with Joe Spadoni and Joe Shasky on 95.7 The Game.
Giddings in for Spadoni. Shasky here holding it down. Yeah, I mean, that was the stretch in the basketball game where the Warriors were able to reclaim control, and Draymond Green was at the center of it. Jimmy Butler was awesome. But when Draymond Green is playing, I'll go ahead and say it, Defensive Player of the Year level basketball, Shasky, the Warriors are a very different team. And we did not see it against the Denver Nuggets. Thank you, sir. We did not see it against the Nuggets, but I think because they got embarrassed, it made sure that we were going to see it against the Milwaukee Bucks.
Yeah, I just think that they played very galvanized, inspired basketball yesterday, knowing what was at stake. And there's just not a lot of margin of error right now, Evan. Like, there just isn't. Like, they can't throttle down at all. You know, the Nuggets can throttle down a little. They've got a little bit of a cushion. And they went out there and they were like, all right, we got nothing to lose. And then all the others stepped up. And I think the very next night, you sit Steph Curry, and the Warriors were like, all right, now the others have to step up. And I thought they did. I thought GP2 stepped up. Pajemski stepped up. I thought Draymond stepped up. Quite frankly, you know, Draymond, let's call it what it is. When Steph don't play, he has a tendency to get tossed out of games. I thought he was on his P's and Q's yesterday, even though it wasn't his greatest offensive game. And then Jimmy Butler clearly stepped up. Quentin Post stepped up. Like, everyone had their moments. Pajemski, I don't know if I referenced him yet. So it was nice to see a good, solid team win led by Jimmy and Dre.
Yeah, again, 104-93 last night, the Warriors beat the Bucks. By the way, we're brought to you by Golden Gate, serving the Bay Area for three generations. When you succeed, we succeed. Visit GoldenStateLumber.com. You just got me thinking. You know why I think that we saw the best Draymond last night? And why, to your point, he didn't, I don't know, get ejected or just not show up?
There was a checkout of Dre when, you know.
No, you're right. No, you're right. You're absolutely right. I think it's because, for once, or for the first time in a long time, when Steph is out, there's still a superstar on the floor.
Hmm.
There's still another player that he respects at that same level, not in the same way, but of Steph. And so, yes, for the last couple of seasons when Steph didn't play, yeah, he's running with Wiggins. A couple of years ago, perhaps it was you know, Poole, Klay Thompson, or a different version, a post-injury version of Klay Thompson. Draymond's like, dude, we're probably going to lose this game. Or this is not going to be one. This is one that I got to work damn hard just to be in the game. And this ain't going to be fun. This is going to take a lot out of me. I think that any other year, on the tail end of a back-to-back, especially after getting worn out against Aaron Gordon and a bunch of bigs in Denver, Draymond Green, I don't know if he would have got ejected, but he would have thrown in the towel last night. But because they're playing meaningful basketball, and I think more importantly, Jimmy Butler's there, yeah, I do think we see a different Draymond.
The one aspect of Dre that I did not foresee coming when they made the Jimmy Butler acquisition, number one, the like bromance that him and Jimmy have. Clearly, like you call it respect, it's deeper than that. Like, they're very few players in the league for Draymond are on his level in terms of how he views them. Clearly, Jimmy is someone who he sees as a peer. I don't know how many guys in the league you can say that about. And I'm dead serious about this. There might be more talented players, but like Case in point. I'm throwing out some names. LaMelo Ball. You bring LaMelo Ball to the team. Draymond doesn't think he's on his level. No, LaMelo might think that. So they're not going to have that cohesion and that respect that goes in both directions. I don't even know if Book, you know, like someone like Devin Booker, he would look at it that way. But because Jimmy's a similar age and has accomplished certain things and has that equity league-wide, I really do believe that Draymond views him on the same level as him as a peer.
Well, here's what Jimmy Butler said about Draymond Green and his defense.
He just knows. He knows everybody that he's going up against, whether they're the star player, the third option, or the first guy off the bench. It doesn't matter. He's locked in, and he's never wanting you to help, which is, you know, sometimes he does get beaten. He'll still get mad if you help, but he's just locked in.
He also made a joke that's like, Draymond doesn't want to lose on defense against a five-year-old. You know, that's the kind of competitor that he is. I would, with an asterisk, say when he wants to be. When Draymond Green is feeling that kind of way, mm-hmm. when he, I think, takes it personal, which is how the entire, I actually think the entire team felt that way. They felt embarrassed after the Denver game.
They should.
Steve Kerr was still terse at the podium during the pregame press conference yesterday. Like, I think they took that game to heart. And so, yeah, it's one of the reasons why I felt like they were going to beat Milwaukee, in addition to the Bucks have not been playing great basketball. I don't think they're a great team. I don't know if the Warriors are a great team, but last night proved to me again that I believe that they're a good team. Good teams win that kind of game even without their best player because they just got punked 24 hours prior.
Everyone's going to say that Giannis is like, you know, athletically he's a freak, but he does do similar things to what OG, Cat, and Aaron Gordon did
to
them.
He's physically dominant.
But they're, I don't know, do you consider him as rugged as those other guys? Around the rim.
I mean, he's a lot more raw.
Yeah.
But he's just pure power.
Yes.
He's going to put his head down, and most teams are not going to be able to stop that freight train.
No, but I think that obviously Draymond did a great job on him, but I thought that collectively they sent doubles and like Moody came over multiple times late in possessions. Just get another hand up in his face and just send someone their way to kick the ball out of his hands. The fact that he only had six attempts, I know he had free throws and whatnot, against Draymond, to me, yeah. That, yes, Draymond deserves a ton of credit, but I also think stylistically the way that they were sending their timing, their double teams, they just didn't play buttoned up smart basketball like that prior to the acquisition of Jimmy. They're just a smarter half court defensive team.
Yeah, I mean, I think, well, look, their defense has been better, you
yes.
know, and they're able to now beat teams like the Bucks even at full strength. They handled them in Milwaukee without Giannis, and everyone was like, oh, well, you know, you beat a team without Giannis, that's a nice win. Lillard had, I think, 38 and 10 turnovers, that was.
Mm-hmm.
And then this game, it's like, all right, we'll do it now. Like, do it when the team is at their full strength. And you threw this question out earlier. I think it's a good one, you know, with everything that the Warriors were up against without Steph, end of a back-to-back, third game in four nights, fourth game in six nights, Milwaukee at full strength. Like, is that the most impressive win to you so far since they've gotten Jimmy Butler?
I think it is for me, just as of right now. No, I don't know how much that's saying. I think a lot of people like dismiss the Bucks as a championship team. Giannis is one of the greatest players ever. I mean, like, he's on a short list of one of the greatest international players of all time, all right? And say what you want about Brook Lopez. The guy could still go off. He did last night. Dame Lillard's clearly... I have, like, a running gag where I like to rip Dame Lillard because he plays zero defense, and I don't think that he elevates others. But he's still a great all-time player, top 75 player. And, yeah, they cut their faucet off. The one thing, though, is Jimmy has had an unbelievable amount of success against Milwaukee going back to the Miami days. And now I kind of know why. When Middleton hurt the knee, he became a completely different player. They don't have anyone to physically match up with him out on the perimeter. It's a great matchup for Jimmy Butler. And then he not only can go out on the perimeter and kind of, you know, play a nice court game in terms of facilitating and getting to his spots, but he can also back you down on the block. They don't really have, like, if you're trying to guard him with Kevin Porter Jr., good luck.
No, I mean, you just can't, like, well, that's where, you know, Butler isn't the athlete that he used to be, certainly at age 35, but he's still just as smart as ever. And, like, he understands how to get his at whatever time he wants.
Yeah.
And I think that's where the Denver game, I think you saw it a little bit, like, when he realized that they were on the verge of losing that game, he tried to turn it on, but the rest of the team was just playing so sloppy, they weren't going to be able to get it done. Also, you got to credit the Nuggets. They made a lot of incredible shots down the stretch.
I thought the contested shot-making from them was out of this world.
The Russell Westbrook three, when he was 1-for-8 and still took it and was all
after
net.
After airballing?
Yeah, it's like, all right, well, if he's going to hit that, you just got to tip your cap.
Michael Porter Jr. hit a shot, and Buddy Hield was all over him. It was a great, I thought it was great defense. You cannot play any better. And Michael Porter Jr. just rose up, bang. I mean, with a guy all up in his grill. It was an unbelievable shot. They did a really good job hitting big shots. Yesterday, though, like, Gary Trent Jr., who was known as a shooter, streaky one, I thought that they did a really good job contesting him. I think that their contested shots have been significantly better in the last month and a half. And I can't believe I'm saying this. I think Buddy Hield is playing good defense. The shot drives me nuts, okay? The whole experience of Buddy is a roller coaster. But defensively, he's way more consistent than I thought. He tries hard.
Yeah, he's not as... I feel like he was advertised this summer as like a traffic cone.
Jordan Poole. That's what I thought that he was going to basically be. Like, meaning, I don't care to pay attention off ball.
Well, I think that Buddy Hield is someone that, like, as a one-on-one guy, I don't feel good. But he's surprisingly kind of good off the ball. Like, I feel like he'll stick his hand when a guy is driving in, rip it. At the very least, and he uses, I mean, he's like 6'5". Like, he's at least big enough to kind of body a guy if you charge into him. And the only place that I still just, I cannot get over Buddy Hield is when he's bringing the ball up or they start a transition fast break and the ball ends up in his hands and he's got to make a decision that does not include shooting the ball. That's the only time where I'm still just like, give it up. I don't care if it's to Quentin Post. Have him bring it up and let Buddy Hield float to the corner.
I need to have a one-on-one, the goofball game. Kuzma versus Buddy. Like, just an empty gym. Get the YouTube cameras out. Let's see it.
Dude, I can't stand. There's Kyle some Kuzma. Players that I just cannot stand. Kyle Kuzma's one of them.
He drives me insane.
And he was actually a big part of why they ended up taking the lead, because he just got hot in that third quarter and started knocking down threes.
He's way bigger than you think. He's got multiple inches on Kuminga.
He is, and I know they didn't have anything for Middleton, and they basically got a guy who could play. But
Middleton's knees shredded.
But Kuzma is also a reason that, like, if you're looking at the Bucks, you just look at their five-man starting lineup. Giannis is still, even at, what, he's in like year 12 or something. Yeah. He's still awesome. Damian Lillard, whatever you think about him, he's still a good player. Everyone else beyond that, like Brooke Lopez, is ancient.
100%. Statue.
Torian Prince is...
I think he's weak.
Fine. No, and Kyle Kuzma is just a chucker.
He's a clown.
Like, their team makes no sense. And that's why, I guess, if people want to call in, and again, 888-957-9570, if you want to say that last night didn't, I don't know, push you back into the vibes that we were feeling, again, over the weekend coming off the win against the Knicks, I'll hear that. But it doesn't take away from the fact that the Warriors got a win when they were, like, they were underdogs last night.
No Steph.
No Steph Curry, and they got it done.
And not only that, I think the Bucks being at full strength is important. Well, I guess no Bobby Portis, but being at close to full strength is a big deal. Like, when they played the Knicks multiple times, you miss Jaylen on one of them, and you miss Kat on the other one, right? And so that's going to kind of poo-poo that one for some people. I feel like this is one of their best wins, especially given how bad, you know, 22 hours earlier was in terms of the turnovers. And that third quarter, it wasn't like the Bucks gave up. I thought the Bucks were valiant. And that third quarter, the Warriors were throwing the ball around. They didn't have the tempo. The Bucks were hitting shots. And for them to stabilize, right the ship, and then close it out the way they did going away, that was extremely impressive. That was an impressive win for me.
You're listening to 95.7 The Game, KGMZ-FM and HD1 San Francisco, an Odyssey Sports Station. Always live in the free Odyssey app, and now we are broadcasting from the Laughing Monk Studios. Evan Giddings in for Joe Spadoni, Joe Shasky. Here's where the game turned from Steve Kerr's perspective in the win against the Bucks.
I thought Jimmy's three-point play at the end of the quarter was a big one, getting fouled and knocking down the three free throws. And then, you know, we felt good about that lineup that we put out there to start the fourth. It's been a great lineup for us. They really made a nice push. You know, QP hit the big three from the corner. There's a good flow with that group and good two-way lineup. So they made a great run, and that we were able to hold them off.
During that stabilizing stretch, Jimmy either scored or assisted on 15 of 18 points. And, like, I know that... All right, take a look at the end of the fourth quarter. He wasn't the one that scored all the points. It was actually, you know, his pods had a couple of big threes and Gary Payton the second. But that's the point in the game, the third quarter that Kerr's talking about, where you could have lost the game. Now, they had to go win it. They had to close it. But that's where the game's in the balance. And to me, that's where Jimmy Butler gives this team a different dynamic. Like, Curry is incendiary, and he's someone that can put a team away early. But when the game is hanging, Jimmy Butler gives me as much confidence as anybody that I've seen, probably going back to, gosh, maybe like Kevin Durant, of just being able to grab a game by its scruff and say, come here. Like, Jimmy Butler's just that dude.
The end of the third quarter, they're down 76-70. Every Warrior fan's thinking the same thing. 20-point swing? Are you kidding me? We were up 14, 15, 16, and now we're down 6? And we had, whatever, 9, 10 turnovers. Kuminga travels. We're losing our minds. And Buddy Hield came through with the big-time three. JK with the free throws. Obviously, they got a couple of stops. And then the Jimmy Butler situation. But I really thought they were going to lose that game going away. That felt like the Toronto loss in Toronto earlier this year.
Ooh.
That's what it felt like to me. And I was shocked that they found a way to win it.
Well, they got them again on Thursday. I thought that they were going to figure out a way to win that game. But again, it was like, I didn't know how. But Jimmy Butler's the how. Like, he's the how. I don't know if he's the why or the what, but he's just the how because... And I don't know, that's what's been so much fun about watching this team. It's just watching them figure it out in real time because Jimmy seems to make the correct decisions. But it could be a pass. It could be a grifting foul. It could be that three-point play at the end of the quarter. But you just kind of trust him. Like, that's the difference to me about the Warriors pre- and post-Butler. And it's not an indictment of any of the rest of the players. Obviously, the rest of the players have to be good.
Mm-hmm.
Moody's been playing well since Jimmy's got here, and he'd been good before. Pajemski stepped right back in and played really well last night. Gary Payton II, I think, has been kind of an unsung hero.
It's been a month of great ball.
He's closing now.
With a broken beak.
Your boy Quentin Post has been shooting the lights out. Buddy Hield has had his ups and downs, but when he's on, they generally win games. But they just feel like a team that... With Curry and Butler, I realize Steph wasn't there last night, but it was highlighted because Curry was absent, that they have more know-how and less panic. Like, to your point, against Toronto, they just panicked. They panicked, they lost. Against the Jazz down the stretch, right on deadline day, they panicked and they lost. Last night, they panicked in that third quarter, but they didn't lose the game. And that's a different sign of growth.
Didn't you think the shot selection was significantly better? And this isn't a knock on Curry, but I just feel like there are times where they become so Curry reliant because that's the way they've had to win the last couple of years. Where we just, let's just call it, they take a lot of bad shots early in the shot clock. You know, you get a stop. I'm a big believer in momentum within a moment, right, of a game. Situational basketball. You get a stop. You haven't gotten a lot of stops. You come down and you jack up a 38-footer. What isn't a good look? No one else touched the ball. You don't even have a person underneath the hoop to rebound. That's not a good possession. Maybe 6 years ago it was for Steph, but not anymore. So I guess the key for me is, how do we blend the two? How do we find a way to utilize the frenetic pacing and the spacing that Steph Curry brings to the table while also blending in the methodical half-court play of Jimmy Butler? If they can find a way to do that over the next 3 or 4 weeks, that to me is the recipe for how they're going to be able to detonate versus teams and explode on them in the fourth quarter in a 7-game series.
Well, yeah, and to your point, like, I wonder if last night is what a Jimmy game looks like, and he had 24, 10 assists, 8 rebounds, was 11-11 at the free throw line. How do we find a way to extract a Jimmy game when Steph is there?
Exactly.
And there was a little bit of that against Detroit, but why I also believe that last night they had a good chance to win was because Jimmy doesn't have to be deferential. And I think at his core, he's a little more of a passive player. He can get his, but he's willing to try and get everyone else involved before he starts doing his own. And last night, he didn't have to do that.
How many times do you think he's taken shots at the end of the shot clock, not because he's the one with the ball, dribble, 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 because he's waiting for something to materialize? All right, nothing's there. All right, I will be the one to take this end of the shot clock shot. I would say...
Well, steps on the floor a lot.
It happens a lot. How many times prior to Jimmy Butler was it hot potato, and then, oh my God, the shot clock's winding down? Here comes a horrific shot. Before, it happened a lot, actually. I've seen more 24-second violations with the Warriors this year than in, what, a decade? 15 years?
Or I think before you also Jimmy, see a lot of early shot clock shots because those are the best ones they're going to get.
100%.
You got to take it as early as possible because you're not going to get a better look.
I didn't think shot selection was a huge problem last night, and that's why I'm saying I'm crediting the Warriors and Jimmy. they've done a really good job being methodical and getting good looks. GP2 has had wide open looks in the corner for what, how many games in a row now? And he's hitting them. You know, credit him. He's decisive. He's swinging. He's hitting. And so I do think that the balance on the floor has been really nice. And we get to meet a Quinton Post. They have to stay committed to playing Quinton Post. You need to play him through the ups and through the downs. There's going to be matchups. He gets torched. But what he brings to the table allows you to play certain combinations of players that are defensive weapons alongside of him that you just can't. You just can't play certain combinations when you're playing TJD or Looney. They just can't shoot. And if Draymond's going to be out there a lot, Quinton Post is a vital piece for them unlocking the other players in the offense because of the spacing. And if he hits a couple of shots, boom, you're good to go.
Well, I think that Quinton Post, like a lot of their role players, are kind of matchup-based. Like last night was a good matchup for Quinton Post because he's guarding Brook Lopez, who kind of sits at the three-point line, is a little bit of a statue.
He'll set the high pick.
Yeah, exactly. And he's also not someone that is... Like, Post isn't going to play down in the paint against him, where Lopez's length is probably his best advantage. So Post is, he's going to be able to play against him. I thought that last night he got exposed against Aaron Gordon. Against faster forwards, Post is going to have trouble. But to your point, there might be points in specific games, or maybe postseason series, where you're able to figure out, okay, center's in the game, a true five's in the game. Now we got to deploy Post and kind of get him going because... they don't have a ton of shooting. Like, the fact that Post and Buddy, at full strength, you know, they might come off the bench. But last night, they were 8 for 15 from three-point range. They combined for 29 points. If those guys are your swing players, I'm with you. You got to play them.
There was a point early in the game where Jimmy had already hit a three, which was great. It opens up the floor. And then they blitz him at the top of the key. He just swung it to Quinton Post in the lane. Quinton's like, looked around like, oh, I'm just going to dunk this. And I'm thinking, how hard, and it's not a knock on these guys, but how hard does TJD have to work to get a dunk around the rim?
Well, and it's got to be a dunk because he can't finish anywhere outside of the restricted area.
The poor guy has got butterfingers. It drives me nuts. And then Looney, we know, like, he's vertically challenged in terms of, like, getting up off the ground. So, Q, I think... catching the ball in traffic is going to be something that's got to, he's got to develop, right? He's got to develop the little jump hook in the lane when people are there because he's so big, no one will be able to defend it. And then defensively, he's going to have to, but he's going to make mistakes. You're going to have to put him back into games where he struggles early and give him the opportunity to learn from something and play through the mistakes. They did it with Pajemski, and they're reaping some of those rewards. You've done it now for about 2 months with Moody, and they're reaping those rewards. You have to stay committed to Quinton Post. You have to. I'm not saying 40 minutes a night, but the 20 to 28 minutes is the sweet spot for him.
Yeah, when he's on, they generally win. When Buddy Hield is on, they generally win. How can we get that more often?
Exactly.
Is the question. 888-957-9570 is the number. Evan Giddings in for Joe Spadoni alongside Joe Shasky. If you were going to sum up the last two nights, I think this is interesting. This was a back-to-back that we had all circled. The Warriors, they're going to get tested by the Nuggets. Granted, we thought that Jokic and Murray and Brown were going to play. And then the Bucks. How would you sum up the last two nights? Do you feel like it's a little bit of a letdown? Do you feel like it's what you expected going 1-1? Does it make you feel better? Are you concerned? What did you learn over the last two nights, the back-to-back, the last 48 hours for the Golden State Warriors? And again, does that win last night nullify the Nuggets' loss? 888-957-9570 is the number. Anthony Slater coming up in a little over an hour at 8:30 at the Athletic on the River Islands guest line. And then at 7:30, 20 minutes away.
Mashed potatoes guy.
At 7:30, 20 minutes away. Do you believe the game where we ask Dub Nation how much they believe in the Warriors' title chances?
Do you believe?
That's what's coming up on the game brought to you by Valvoline Instant Oil Change. Spring in action at Valvoline Instant Oil Change. Your 15-minute drive-through oil change. Stay in your car while friendly technicians check oil, batteries, lights, tires, and more. Locations and coupons at BarryOilChange.com. All vehicle types welcome. We're back after this on The Roast.
Survivor 48 is here, and alongside it, we're bringing you a brand new season of On Fire, the only official Survivor podcast. If you're a Survivor super fan, you won't want to miss this deep dive into every episode where we break down how we designed the game, the biggest moves, your burning questions. It's the only podcast that gives you inside access to Survivor that nobody else can. Listen to On Fire, the official Survivor podcast with me, Jeff Probst, every Wednesday after the show, wherever you get your podcasts.